When I was 16 years old, I stole a car and ran away from home. My life was a complete mess. I hated school. I was being bullied. I didn't have a father. My relationship with my mother was challenging. Obviously, romantic relationships, a complete mess. And I wasn't sure what else to do. And I just felt like that the only thing I could do was run away. Now, you might think that that sort of thing shouldn't happen. I had been raised in the church. I mean, literally from birth. I was baptized at 15, Christian home. That sort of thing isn't supposed to happen. You're not supposed to have those kinds of difficulties when you have that kind of background. But that kind of thinking is all wrong. First of all, because bad stuff happens to everybody. Everybody has difficulties. Everybody has problems of some kind. But being in church, being from a Christian home, being baptized, only helps you when you're serious about living your faith and you're not just going through the motions. Going through the motions of being a Christian doesn't net you any benefit whatsoever. It really makes things worse. It's only when you're truly living out a relationship with God that you're enabled to handle the difficulties that you have and receive the blessings that God promises His people. Now, I may have touched on some problems that you and I have or have had in common in what I said a moment ago, or maybe you have entirely different problems. But the truth is, we all have them. It's easy to come, especially to come to church, isn't it? It's easy to come to church. It's kind of like Instagram. When you look at somebody's posting on Instagram, what are you seeing? You're seeing the best they got. You're seeing them at their very best. And it's easy to scroll through Instagram and think everybody's life is perfect. It's easy to come to church and think that everybody else's life is perfect. You know, especially older Christians. Maybe you look at Mike and think Mike's a preacher and Mike's an elder and Mike doesn't have any concerns or any problems. There's not anything on Mike's mind tonight that's bothering him that could threaten to discourage him. But if we could ask him and he were willing to talk about it, Mike's got some things on his mind. He's got some things he's worried about. You know, or we were to ask Matt and Ellen. You know, Matt and Ellen look like they got it all together, right? Look like they're doing well. He's got a job he loves, a beautiful family. Things look like they're going well. But I promise you, if you were to ask Matt tonight or ask Ellen, you got something on your mind? Is there something that's bothering you? Have you got some difficulty somewhere? They would tell you that there was. I don't know what they are. I'm just telling you, I know that they are. You know, and it's easy to think, you know, got a guy coming in preaching for a week. This is what he does for a living. He preaches, right? And he's got great hair, and he smiles all the time, and he seems to be happy, and he probably doesn't have anything going on, and that just couldn't be farther from the truth. We all have difficulties. What are your difficulties? What are your problems? What are the things that you're worried about tonight? What are the things that that make you cry? What are the things that bother you? What are the things that depress you? I've all got them. The question is, how are you handling them? How are you handling the challenges of life? Are you handling them? Or are they handling you? What we're going to do tonight, and I hope that you'll turn with me to Romans chapter 12. Our text is going to be Romans chapter 12. And we're going to talk tonight from just two verses about how to either eliminate your difficulties or to find the strength and the ability to handle them. Right? So these two verses are going to tell us what we need to know that will either eliminate or better yet, right, what's better than getting rid of a problem? Never having one. These verses will tell us how to keep those problems out. Or if we are having difficulty about how to handle them. And it just simply is through the kind of solid, genuine, committed relationship with God that these verses talk about. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. What those verses describe is not just being baptized and going to church and then cutting loose whenever your parents aren't around, drinking when you get the chance, fooling around with your significant other when you have the opportunity, misbehaving when you're away from people that you go to church with because nobody's going to see it, acting up when you go off to college because you don't know anybody who's there and nobody there knows you. That's not what those verses are talking about. Sitting in a garage doesn't make you a car. Sitting in a church building doesn't make you a Christian. Right, the fact that you come here and sit in this building or whatever building it is that you regularly go to and sit in doesn't make you a Christian. Just sitting in a building and listening to somebody like me ramble on doesn't make you a Christian. Going through the motions of worship and the assembly, those things don't make you a Christian. What makes you a Christian is doing exactly what he talks about in Romans chapter 12 and verses 1 and 2. And it's when you do that, that you're enabled to handle the difficulties or eliminate them, or better yet, not have them at all. And so there's three things here that I want you to notice that are going to get us there where we need to be spiritually. And the first one is in verse 1. And he says, present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice. Give your entire self to God. Take everything that you have, body, soul, spirit, resources, car, house, money, everything you have, and give it to God. Paul has in mind here what in the Old Testament is called the whole burnt offering. There was an offering that was given to God, and the entire animal was placed on the altar, and the entire thing was burned up and given to God. That's what he's talking about, except he says you're not dying, you're living to present all of your body a sacrifice to God. Do you know how many laws there are in the Old Testament? If you were to go through and mark every law in the Old, you know how many there would be? 613. There are 613 commands and laws in the Old Testament. You ever wondered why there are so many? Why does God have laws about the kitchen? Why does God have laws about the roof? Why does God have laws about the bedroom? Why does God have laws about the public square and the private home? Why does he have laws about business and sex and money and clothing and hair and cutting yourself? Why does he have laws about all of that? Because the message that God is sending is, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, all of your life belongs to me. I own it all. When you date somebody, when you marry somebody, when you get a job, when you retire, when you spend, when you save, when you drive, when you shop, everything that you do is mine. There's not one corner of life that we get to cut off and go, I don't have to listen to God on that one. I can do whatever I want there. Verse 1 tells us that we're supposed to give all of ourselves to God. That's point number 1. Point number 2 is in verse 2 when he says, do not be conformed to this world. Do not be conformed to this world. Chances are very good that if you can see it on TV, that if everybody's wearing it, if everybody's listening to it, If everybody's saying it, if everybody's going there, chances are pretty good that what? Probably not something you should do. We're supposed to be different from the world, and we spend all of this time trying to what? Fit in and be like everybody else. Instead of standing out and making a contrast with the world. When I was a kid, I got a watch. I don't know if you remember these watches or not, but it was a black watch with a black screen. It had an LED, like a little LED readout. If you're old like me, you probably remember that. And it was red. The readout was red. And it was awesome as long as you were inside. You could read the time on it. But as soon as you walked outside in the sunlight, you couldn't see it anymore. There wasn't enough contrast between the red and the black to make the time stand out, and the watch was worthless. And whenever there's not enough Christianity, when there's not enough obedience, when there's not enough love, when there's not enough commitment, when there's not enough holiness, when there's not enough righteousness, when there's not enough purity to make us stand out, for people to look at us and go, man, there's just something different about that guy. You know, if somebody could follow you around, we won't count Sunday and Wednesday. That doesn't count. But if somebody could follow you around for an entire day, and at the end of that day, somebody said, did you know that person was a Christian? And they said, there's no way I could tell. That's a problem. We're supposed to be standing out. Don't be conformed to the world. That's number two. Point number three, he says, instead of being conformed, be what? In verse 2, be transformed. Be different. You're supposed to be totally different from the person you were and from everyone around you. Becoming a Christian doesn't mean getting wet and staying the same. Becoming a Christian doesn't mean just changing church names. I used to go to a church with that name, now I go to a church with that name. It doesn't mean something like joining a club of people I like hanging around. Becoming a Christian means you are entirely different than what you were before you were baptized. Did you know that when a caterpillar goes into a cocoon and then comes out as a butterfly, did you know that it's not just a caterpillar with a spiffy new pair of wings? I always thought that's what it was. The caterpillar goes in and then he comes out and it's a caterpillar with wings. It's not that. Did you know that his body is different? His feet are different? His eyes are different? His food is different? And of course, his means of transportation is different. Everything is different. And that's how it's supposed to be when you and I become a Christian. It's not that we go into the water and we come up the same people we were. We're just wet now. But it makes us different. It makes us somebody else. Totally different and committed to God. Now somebody might say, I don't want that. I don't want to do that. Maybe that's you. Maybe you come to church. Maybe your family's in church. But you're not a Christian. And you say to yourself and maybe to other people, I hear that. I hear what he's saying. I understand it. But I don't want it. I get that. I didn't want it either for a long time. I didn't want that. And I'll be honest with you. There are days that I still have to make a decision to want it. I understand not wanting it, but don't take my word for it. If you're not a Christian, if you haven't become a child of God and come into the kingdom of God, be honest. How's that working for you? How are you doing with that? If you're not a child of God, if you haven't become a Christian, how is that going? If you honestly have to say to yourself, it's not going very well, then it's time to make a change. Because the very definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting what? A different result. If your life isn't going so well and you're not a Christian, you need to change that. It's time to become a child of God. You say, well, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not a Christian, and things are going fine for me. My life's great. I got no problem. So sometimes that's true. Sometimes you're not a Christian and things are going fine for you. Today. What about tomorrow? What about 20 years from now? 30 years from now? What about much later than that? Could you subsist on junk food for a day? A week? A month? Could you just eat junk and do okay? Yeah, for a while. You know, when I was in high school, they made the serious mistake of giving us a choice as to what we could have for lunch. And they had the real food line and they had the junk food line. Terry, do they do that where you work? Yeah, see? Who gives high school students that option? But my entire high school existence was a lunch of Twinkies and a chocolate milkshake every single day. It didn't kill me. I didn't even put on weight. I was 16, 17, 18. My metabolism was going like a race car. What if I kept doing that? What if I kept eating Twinkies and chocolate milkshake day after day after day? What would happen? My body would fall apart. You see, you can refuse to do the right thing for a while, and it looks like it's all working out. But I'm telling you, from experience, one day it stops working out. One day it stops being okay. And even if you could get through this entire life, turn over to Hebrews chapter 9 and look at verse 26. Even if you could get through this entire life and not be a Christian and everything go well for you, there's still this. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27. It is, the writer says, it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment. Now I want you to notice that word appointed. I've got this week several things on my calendar. I've got several appointments, phone calls I have to make, people to visit, work to do. I've got several appointments on my calendar. How many of those are guaranteed to happen? We're going to go visit Nate and Michael Ann tomorrow morning. I've got a phone call I've got to make while we're gone, right? We got to go eat tomorrow night. I have to come to church tomorrow night. All that stuff's on my calendar for tomorrow. How much of that stuff is guaranteed to happen? Not one thing. But I'm telling you that the appointment that he talks about in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27, you're not going to miss that appointment. There's not going to be something else that comes up and you can't make it. You're not going to miss that appointment. It is appointed that you will die. Now, the younger you are, the farther away that seems. I remember being 16, 18, 20 years old. The preacher would talk about death and it was in one ear and right out the other. I'm 20. What do I got to think about dying for? Did you know that people die at 20 every day? 18-year-olds die, 16-year-olds die, 15-year-olds die every day. You're going to die. And after you die, there's going to be a judgment. And it won't matter how well your life went or how much money you made, because Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16, what's it going to profit you if you gain the entire world and lose your soul? It's not going to matter one bit. I understand when you say, I don't want to do that. But you just got to do it. Maybe you say, well, I'd like to do it. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. You say, I'd like to do it. I'm not a Christian. And I've been thinking about becoming a Christian, and I know I should, but I just can't do it. I've talked to people many times in this situation, people I've been talking to and trying to get them to become a Christian, and they will say to me, I really want that, but I can't do it. I can't be a Christian. I can't succeed. And I always tell them the same thing. You're right. You can't. You can't. Did you remember what Paul said in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2? He didn't say, don't be conformed to this world, but transform yourself. Do you remember what he said? Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed. Be transformed. If you could transform yourself, you wouldn't need God. But notice what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15. What do you know about the Apostle Paul? You know anything about him? What do you know about the Apostle Paul? Was he a pretty impressive guy? Traveled all over the world, preached the gospel. He was beaten. He was stoned. He was whipped. He was shipwrecked. He was hungry, and he never slowed down. He was an amazing servant of God. You know how he did that? 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 10. Paul said, by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace toward me did not prove vain. But I labored even more than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God with me. Do you see what Paul is saying there? Paul says, the only reason I can do anything, the only reason I can function as a child of God, the only reason I can get anything right is because God has given me his grace. Now, God's not going to give you his grace and say, all right, now I'm going to make you do the right thing. You have to take his grace and use it and work with it and cooperate with it. But if you could transform yourself, you wouldn't need God. Of course you can't do it. But when you become a Christian, God is going to give you the power to do it. Maybe you are a Christian and you're about ready to give up. Maybe you are a Christian and you say, I've tried it and I've worked at it and I just keep failing and I can't do this anymore. You ever heard of Ted Williams? This is way before my time, all right? If he's not before your time, I'm sorry, I'm not calling you old. But have you ever heard of Ted Williams? Ted Williams is known as the greatest hitter who ever lived. The greatest in baseball, the greatest hitter who ever lived. Now, why was Ted Williams known as the greatest hitter who ever lived? Because he hit 1,000? Because he never struck out? Because he got on base every time? Ted Williams was called the greatest hitter who ever lived. He hit 344. That means that for every 10 at-bats, he didn't get on over six times. That's less than two hits a game. Most of the time when Ted Williams went to the plate, he didn't get on base. Most of the time. And yet, he's considered the greatest who ever lived. We think that because we mess up, we fail, we don't get it right, we make a mistake, we commit sin, then we think we're a failure. But have you ever thought about the difference between Peter and Judas? Have you ever thought about the difference between Peter and Judas? Peter and Judas both messed up when Jesus was at the end of his life. Peter and Judas both messed up. Peter and Judas both betrayed Christ. But Peter came back and Judas killed himself. What's the difference? They both failed, but one of them understood the grace and the forgiveness of God and was willing to come back and make it right and keep going, and the other one threw up his hands and said, I'm a failure and I quit. You're not a failure until you quit trying. You haven't failed until you stop working at your relationship with God. When you do that, you can take out your songbook, by the way. Is it 39 in the supplement, Daniel? All right. Number 39 in the supplement. We're going to sing that song in just a moment. But I'm telling you that when you have the kind of relationship with God that we've talked about tonight, when you give yourself wholly to God, you don't hold anything back. He'll say, okay, God, I'm going to give you most of my life, but the money part, I'm going to do myself. Or the relationship part, or this thing over here that I like to do that you don't want me to do, I'm going to keep doing that. When you give God everything you have, and when you are not like the world, and when you allow God by His grace to transform you as you cooperate with it, you automatically knock out a lot of problems that a lot of people have that you just don't have to worry about. You're not going to get drunk and have an accident and kill an innocent family. You're not going to do that. You're not going to have to worry about unwed pregnancy. You're not going to have to worry about drug addiction. You're not going to have to worry about getting into fights all the time because you don't know how to control what you say. You don't have to worry about those. Those are problems you're not going to have because you have this sort of relationship with God. You're not going to solve all your problems. You're still going to have difficulties. But when you're a Christian, God gives you the ability to handle and overcome them rather than being defeated by them. That's why it's essential tonight. If you are not a Christian, you need to become one tonight. You need to do it tonight. If you are not a Christian, why are you putting it off? If you have not been baptized in water for the forgiveness of your sins, what are you waiting on? You have no guarantee that you're going to make it home tonight. I hope to God that when we get together here tomorrow, that all of those who are planning on being here, I hope you're going to be here. But you might not make it. You might not make it home. You might not make it to work or to school tomorrow. You might not make it back here. There's no guarantee that you're going to make it through tonight. What is it that you're waiting on? Why are you putting it off? If you're not a Christian, you need to become one. If you are a Christian and you're having difficulty, that's why the church is here. That's why we're here. It's what we're supposed to do. And I know this group. I know that this group is patient and kind. I know this group works with people and loves people and helps people and sacrifices for people. I've seen it. You don't have to deal with stuff on your own. This group's going to help you. Get some help before you leave the building. Maybe you're not sure what to do about any of that. I just don't know what to do. Man, talk to us. Grab somebody after church and say, I need to talk about that. And we'll talk to you all night long. The main thing is to not put it off. What are you waiting on? If you need to do something with your relationship with God, why are you putting it off? Let us help you if we can. We'd love to talk to you privately after church. You can come forward, take a seat on the front as we stand and sing together.